Hello and welcome to the Not So Alpha Males podcast, the show where every other Thursday, two cool nerds delve into the worlds of science, psychology, and pretty much everything in between. Brought to you by your hosts, me, Tom.
And me, Toby.
And today, I'm going to be talking to you about bees, you know, the humble bumblebee and what they bring to mankind, which is quite a lot, so stay tuned for that. And what are you bringing to the table this week, Tobes?
So today I'm going to be talking about plastic. And the war on plastic. Is it what we think it is? Where does our plastic go? It's eye-opening.
Well, that does sound good. And to make sure you don't miss any of the action going on here, make sure you go on and check us out on Instagram. Go follow us, where we drop all kinds of posts and updates. You'll find us at Not So Alpha Males. And as always, we'll be drinking throughout this episode. So without further ado, what have you got for cocktails this week, Toby?
So, Tom, I've gone for the Malibu Bay Breeze.
Oh,
which is
okay.
Very tropical. We've got some Malibu in there. And I think I'm actually maybe a little bit allergic to Malibu. So we'll see how this goes.
How can you be allergic to Malibu?
I don't know. One time I had it, I came out in a rash and my mum gave me a hay fever tablet. Can't remember what happened after that.
Oh, wow. That sounds serious.
Yeah, so she spiked me. But we'll see how this goes. Hopefully not as bad as that.
Okay.
What about you?
This week, I've got an Irish cactus. I wasn't actually going to do this. I had some other idea, but I realised you need 24 hours to chill that drink before you drink it. So kind of didn't plan my life very well. So last minute, an Irish cactus, which is, you can probably imagine, Irish Baileys cream liqueur with tequila. So very simple. It's quite nice. It's essentially horrible. It's basically Baileys. You're drinking Baileys, but with a bit more of a kick. So it's two
What's
parts Baileys.
What's the story behind this one?
I don't. I'm so sorry. I didn't bring a story this one. I know. And I thought about that, but man, I've been up against it with the times this week. Okay. I've not had time to do my usual in-depthness. So you'll have to take that and leave. Anyway, shall we get into the topics for this week?
Let's do it.
So, bees. Big topic. I also thought, you know, after last week's topics, they were very, very intense, you know. That was a lot of brain power going in. So I thought we'd relax this week. And I think with the bees topics and your plastic topics, you know, chilled out listening. I think the audience will appreciate it. Yeah. So I'll start off with some facts then. I mean, did you know that there are 20,000 known species of bees in the world?
I did not.
20,000. That's a lot, man. Yes, I've actually got the list here. So first, we have the Western honeybee. No. that's the episode altogether. In the UK alone, we have 270 different species, which I think is kind of crazy. And these guys, they're found everywhere on the planet. Every continent on the planet, you'll find bees, except for Antarctica. As you can imagine, there's no plants or anything on Antarctica. So
Piri Reis wouldn't have had to map that.
We're really going for the strong connections to past episodes, aren't we? So, yeah, bees are pollinators, and they are the best, most efficient pollinators on the planet that we have. And actually, when I was looking back at the history of how plants evolved and bees evolved, nature saw how good they were at pollinating. And so they evolved to provide the sweet nectar that bees have and make the honey with and things like that. So beforehand, you know, plants would try to pollinate with the winds and things like that, but then bees came along and started doing a much, much better job of it. And to reward them, plants then evolved this sweet nectar and like the smells and the pheromones that they all give off to attract more bees and obviously spread their seeds and spread their pollen a lot further. So
I guess that's,
you know,
that's natural selection right there.
Like, yeah.
The ones that did that ended up spreading a bit more. And
Exactly. So it's nature's always got away. Nature's always got away. So, so then the bees, to respond to the nectar, then evolves to get hairier and hairier bodies to obviously carry more and more pollen. It was really interesting seeing how all over the time these different evolutions happened. And
do you have bees that aren't hairy because it's like too hot to be hairy?
Wasps. So bees came from wasps, and wasps essentially can be looked at as hairless bees, essentially. But
so I'd be the wasp and you'd be the bee.
So yeah, so wasps, they do, so wasps actually do pollinate, and they do contribute to all the pollination cycles in the world, but because they lack that hair, and they lack, specifically, they're called pollen pouches, which is basically this massive hair on the back leg. So when a bee flies over to a flower, and then it rubs, and it's picking out the nectar, because that's what it wants, and then it's rubbing around the plant, and it gets all the pollen on its back. After it's been to a flower, it will then use its hind legs to push all that pollen that's been attached to its hair back to the back legs, where these pouches are kept. And they're not pouches. I don't know why it's called pouches. They're basically like this mound of really, really sticky hair. And that's where all the pollen collects and builds up. It looks kind of disgusting on photos, not gonna lie, but there's like a whole process for this thing, man. It's kind of crazy. So yeah, no, wasps do pollinate, but because they haven't got all that hair, they aren't very good at it. So what I'll end up sort of getting to is that we can't depend on wasps for our pollination, because they can't do it the same efficiency that a bumblebee can. They really have evolved to be the best at that.
Are the bumblebees like the hairiest ones you get?
I actually don't know about different hairiness levels between bees.
Why do you not
I didn't go that far into it. Like, I mean, yeah, sorry, I'm not bringing, this is a terrible episode now. I'm gonna give up. I've not done my research. I can't answer your questions. Probably, I imagine so. I imagine some are better than others. What I can tell you actually is it's the Western honeybee, which is the most commonplace bee you'll find. So out of 20,000 species, this one makes up the biggest majority. And that's because they're the ones, hence the name honeybee, they're the ones that make the honey. So us humans have systematically, domestically bred honeybees so that we can have the honey whilst they do actually all the pollination. So when you're seeing bees out in public, obviously, you'll see the bumblebees, they're quite big populations. You know, they're really big, fat ones that, like, quite cute and fluffy and bobble around in the air. You have those, and then the biggest one is the honeybee, which is the ones you'll see flying around all the plants constantly and collecting all the nectar and pollen and doing all that good stuff. Another interesting thing about bees is this common misconception, I thought this was the case, apparently not, is bees don't die when they sting you. Like, they're not meant to die when they sting you. Because I always remember being taught growing up, like, try not to let a bee sting you, because then they die, and then obviously that's ruining the populations of bees. And it's actually down to the animal which they sting that kills them. And it depends on how tough the skin is on the animal. So we humans actually have quite tough skin. So when they sting us, it's the stinger gets trapped, and then it pulls out half the bee, its intestines and muscles and nerves. It's really, really graphic what I was reading, man. But that's the problem. So like when it preys on its sort of natural, when it preys on its sort of natural prey or natural threats, other insects, the stingers just go in and out really easily and nothing happens. Bee carries on with its life. But when it comes into contact with like animals, like us humans, that's when the myth, so to speak, comes into play, and bees die because they sting you, because they literally rip out half their insides when they're trying to get away from the sting, which is really quite sad. So message of episode 5, don't let bees sting you. Run away or something, I don't know. Just, yeah.
Mate, I do that all the time. I run and scream like a little girl and everyone laughs.
Yeah, but that's...
I'm saving the bees, mate.
That's in response to everything, though. That's not just bees. That's... So, but fair play. No, I see you doing your part. That's good. When I get to the end stuff, like, you'll feel really good about yourself. So fair enough. Lastly, I was going to talk about was the buzzing sound, because, you know, I've got to have a little bit of science in this episode, I thought, and I wanted to look into this a little bit. So, you know, that buzzy sound that they make comes from the flapping frequency of their wings. So a bee can flap its wing at 230 beats per second. That's quite mental.
Isn't there like a thing where bees physically shouldn't be able to fly, like bumblebees?
I know of that.
Scientifically, they shouldn't really be able to fly.
It's something to do with the aerodynamics and like the weight to wing ratio. It's just all wrong. Yet
so
it somehow
fat
works.
Tiny wings.
Yeah, yeah. But I didn't go into that because what I will be getting into is like the pollination cycles and how bees give us food and things like that. And without them, we'll all go die. That's the kind of angle I'm coming from. I just thought, but it was easy to get stuck on the bumblebee because they're just fat and fluffy and do no harm to people. So, but yeah, 230 beats per second. And so, yeah, those rapid wing beats cause the air around the bee to vibrate. And that vibration travels through the air to your ear and then is interpreted as that buzzing sound. Yeah, so the buzzing sounds linked to each type of insects is to do with how quickly they can flap their wings, essentially. The frequency, yeah. Now, I do want to say, I didn't know this either. This is very fascinating to me. Most species of bees don't live in hives. And like in, you know, when you've got these hives of bees and wasps and they all live together in thousands and thousands in a big beehive, that actually isn't the normality for bees. Most bee species live in like little family groups, like a pair, mother and father, and then like things. And they can live in all kinds of areas, which I thought was quite cute as well.
Just going to a little bee home.
Yeah. And, you know, wife and kids there, and they just, yeah, they got their day-to-day life. And, like, they won't live in a big old hive. They just have, like, some might have little holes in the ground, some have a little hole in the wall, like, and they live kind of solitary lives, which is kind of sad.
I think that, not in that a big would be colony. Me if I was a bee, that would be me, I think.
Yeah, not into the big... guy, I'd be there. You're not really into the social interactions and stuff like that. No, fair enough. So, species of bee, there's a couple I want to bring forward, because they warrant talking about, they warrant the publicity. First, we spoke a bit about it, the Western honeybee, also known as the European honeybee. And as I said, that's like the most common one found across the world due to its honey production capabilities. So obviously beekeepers want that because rather than just being able to pollinate their plants and their crops and things like that, they also then get the honey side of things, which is like they can sell and make money on.
And they make the honey with the nectar, right?
Yeah, so that process is quite interesting. So the bees obviously are traveling around to different flowers, collecting the pollen, and then themselves are drinking the nectar of the flowers. And they have two stomachs, one where they store the nectar, which be made into honey, and then the second stomach, which is like their food stomach, the nectar they'll use to actually grow themselves and things like that. So they have like a whole separate stomach to store the good quality nectar to make honey for us, which is kind of cool.
Why do they bother making the honey? Why do they not just eat the food?
Well, I think they use it as a food source for back at the hive because as I'll get into with like the hive hierarchy, different bees have different roles and some of them don't ever leave the hive. So think about it as like they're going away to go get food and bring it back to the hive so that the others can eat, including the queen, the most important one, because she obviously never leaves the hive. So they have like a stomach for themselves for which them to eat and grow and get big and strong. And then also one to like take food back and then provide for the rest of the bees. But then unfortunately humans come along and scrape all the honey out. So, you know,
get really pissed off about
we are a dick species, to be honest. Moving on, we have the European dark bee, which is also known as the German black bee. And these ones are absolute bitches because they will chase people to sting them without any provocation to cause it. Like, they are very aggressive. They are known as very, very aggressive bees. And they don't need, like, a reason. They don't need a threat to their home or something like that to actually make them want to sting things. They just want to do it. So stay away from the European dark bee. Then you have the killer bee, quite a cool one. And that's a hybrid species that's come forward recently. Well, I say recently. And it's a hybrid between the crossbreeding of African honeybees and European honeybees. And this species is much more defensive than any of its sort of counterparts. It's known to attack humans. And when I was reading about it, you know what came to mind? You know, in the film Hunger Games, those Tracker Jacker wasp things that kill one of the contestants. Basically, I'm imagining that when I'm listening to those, when I'm reading about killer bees. Don't go near them.
Isn't the fact that they're killer is because when they sting as like a massive group.
Yes.
Sting kills you. It's just like thousands of them.
Yeah. The thing is that they coordinate themselves and they'll attack something as a group. They'll attack an individual as a group rather than normal bees, which if one gets, you know, pissed off or threatened or whatever, they'll sting, but no one else will come to its aid. Whereas this one, you'll get thousands of bees coming at you and stinging you. And yeah, there have been deaths from these bees.
There's that rumor that, I don't know if it's true, you probably don't know either, but you know the thing about killing a bee? It's like killing a wasp or killing a bee, or when it stings you, it lets off like some aroma, which then attracts the other ones.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was going to touch on this. Like the pheromone network, the pheromone communication network of bees is the most complex system of pheromones in the natural world. Like they use it to, obviously, I'll get into it in a little more detail later because it's really quite fascinating science, but the queen bee, which obviously controls everything that's going on in the hive and its workers and things like that, uses pheromones to control what everyone's doing. And it's quite amazing that they do it all through pheromones, obviously not having speech or things like that. But it's a very powerful communicator. And yeah, that's one of the things is when one dies, it can release pheromones into the air, which can be picked up. And then they know to go to that area or to avoid that area and things like that. So there's also bees do dances. That's quite a big thing. They do different dances to signify different things going on. Yeah, they're very, very talkative, bees are. Yeah, next time you see one, have a chat. Have a chat with a nice bumblebee. moving on then.
Sit in lockdown, mate. If you just sit out the window, talk to a bee.
Bro, I tried to tell you that last week my psyche was cracked, okay? The simulation theory made me question everything. So
now you talk to bees.
Now I talk to bees. Next, the bumblebee, the one that we always bring up. Yes, they have very round bodies. And that's the other thing, now that I'm actually reading my notes on it, the hairs on them are soft compared to every other bee. Those are also the most friendliest type of bee. They won't really attack you ever. That's enough about species of bees. I hope you're going to talk to us about different types of plastic and bore our listeners that way, because we've got a hell of a show on the road.
I thought it would be best not to do that, but obviously you didn't get that.
You didn't tell me. Fuck. Anyway, what I'm going to talk about now is all about the honeybee, because that's obviously the biggest one, and they're the threat to our existence as well as the threats that are going on to their existence at the moment. So first off, bit of beehive hierarchy, how these guys talk, how these guys move, how these guys get around, you know, serious stuff. You have three types of bee, the queen, the workers, and the drones. I don't know if you know any of this stuff already, or...
I know about the queen and the worker bees, but...
Okay, sound. Right, so the queen is just any old larva that was randomly selected at birth and then is fed more than any other larva to obviously grow the biggest and the strongest, and then that one becomes the queen. And it's also allowed to sexually develop, which is a whole other kind of science, to actually be able to lay more larvae and things like that.
So all these larvae, the little eggs... Yeah. You just get fed by all the different bees, and then the biggest one basically becomes queen.
Yeah, so obviously you've got a queen, but then when one queen dies, the pre-existing eggs that have already been laid in the larvae, just out of randomness, the hive itself will, just out of pure numbers, statistics, one will get fed more than other, like one will get fed more than any other, and that one then grows to be the biggest. And it actually, when they get out of their little honeycomb structure, when they get big enough and become a proper bee, then they get out, they will actually eat and kill the other ones that are of similar strength. So you have one that's so above the rest that's then the queen. So she's a real boss ass bitch, to be fair. Like, she's killing it.
How is it that she can have babies? Like, what if it's a him? Or is that not a thing? Like,
no, that's... So what you have is it will... always be a female that becomes a queen, because the main job of the queen is just to reproduce. So there's not, I don't think, in that when the bees are, like, you know, having their little meeting and working out which one to make queen, I don't think a man really comes into the equation, to be honest. Like, it doesn't fulfill the option, so it's just not. They just grow and they become the... They're just drones. They just become drones. And I think she has control over them because of this pheromone network that I'll tell you about. Like, she can control them through the pheromones that she releases. But males just grow and become, and they can become bigger and smaller, obviously, if they get fed more or less. But males will always just become drone bees. So, you know how I said there's workers and there's drones? The workers are all the females and the drones are all the males. And the drones literally do nothing, absolutely nothing, apart from... fertilizing the queen over and over again, minute after minute, and then she lays an egg. So at the peak of her reproduction capabilities, the queen will lay 1,500 eggs per day, and can lay like...
She's getting it.
Yeah, and over her life, she'll lay millions and millions of eggs, hence why you get like the colonies with tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of bees. So yeah, no, the males don't do anything. They're quite pointless, really, apart from they are used to reproduce. It's the workers, which are the females. And these are the ones that actually clean the hive, look after the queen, protect the queen. They build the hive, you know, that honeycomb structure. And they will do all the flying out to flowers, collecting the nectar, collecting the... Like, they do all the grunt work. So hence the name workers. And then the males just sit in the hive all day having goes on the queen, which is kind of weird.
mate, I wish I was a bee.
Yeah. All right, yeah. Anyway, what else about the queen? Because it's quite crazy what she can do. So, oh, the other thing about the workers, they are female, but what the queen does is secretes pheromones that affect female bees to make them not sexually develop any further. So they can't actually have babies themselves. So she remains the one dominant queen until she dies. So it's, you know, kind of a dictatorship in one way. So yeah. Kind of crazy. So yeah, somehow she releases, you know, chemicals into the air, which then stunts the growth and stunts the sexual development of the workers. So they can't have any children themselves.
I wonder why it's like that. Like in terms of survival of the fittest and natural selection, like why wouldn't they want all the bees to then have loads of more bees? And
I don't know.
Why is it that structure that works the best? Like obviously it does, but I wonder why it does.
I mean, I don't know. I presume if a colony had two females, the bees would be like, I don't know what to follow, I don't know what to do. I think the colony and the structure would just break down. Going back to like the actual honey making thing, so what humans get from it all, I spoke a bit about the two stomachs and then they bring the nectar back. What then happens is, so when they've got that full load of nectar in the honey stomach, let's call it that, they pass it back through their mouths back to the worker bees that are back at the hive cleaning and doing that things. And then essentially bee after bee will chew through it over and over and over again. And it does it for about half an hour. And after half an hour, it's passed from bee by bee and it's done enough bees and enough chewing that it's just been turned into honey. And then the bees store that in those honeycomb cells. And this is what's even more crazier. You know, beeswax? So honey, so bees can make honey as well as wax. Once they've filled a nice little cell of the honeycomb structure, they'll then make a nice wax cap to protect it from the air and keep it nice and fresh and things like that. So then that's when the people, well, that's when humans come along and then scrape off the tops and then squeeze all the honey out. Kind of sad. All that work for nothing. So, and then what's also amazing as well is the temperature control within the beehive structure itself. So with all the chewing, it heats up quite a bit. So, and then you get very, very runny honey. So what the some bees that have the task of sitting over the honey cells when they're finished and full, and they'll beat their wings really fast to blow air and cool the honey down, and then another one will come in and put the wax top on. It's like a whole little company, man. It's honestly like Rolls Royce. This is crazy. Assembly line.
How do they know how to do that? Like, I get you say the pheromones, but like, how is the queen just looking out and be like, oh, need to cool that down or send out that smell?
She's up in the main office looking down on the workforce like, oh, I see B39's not doing a lot today. Bring into my office. I don't know. Yeah, it's just a part of the pheromones, obviously, and getting told what to do. But just it's just nature. It actually is crazy.
It's like the bee movie but in real life. Have you seen the bee movie?
I haven't.
Oh, what?
I should have done that for the research. I should have done that for the research of this film. It's so
that's like it. That's scientific. Like a little company.
Yeah, no, it generally is a little honey-making company. So very fair play to them. You know, hats off when they deserved. Anyway, what's our relationship with bees? I'm not being overdramatic when I say that mankind's future on this planet depends on the honeybee. Without the honeybee, we're going to die, which is quite serious because their population has been decreasing rapidly. Like, it's a big problem. There's a lot of charities out there working to make it better and things like that. So looking at what we would not have without our bees, you wouldn't have coffee, no apples, peaches, watermelon. I've got a massive list in front of me. honestly, there's so much. Blueberries, albums, grapes, strawberries, cucumbers, all sorts. And that's because, and it has been proved by many, many a study, one out of three meals made by humans is possible because of the honeybee. So the idea, if honeybees go extinct, it's because we no longer have food sources, so we go extinct. That's the big thing. Because either by directly their pollination of plants to plants, and then us eating those plants, like, you know, the apples, the watermelon, strawberries, they obviously pollinate those plants and they keep on going. So if bees weren't there, we'd run out of those plants, so we wouldn't get that food. Because they affect the crops that we eat, they also affect the crops that animals eat, so they also affect the animals that we eat. So they are very critical. And just to show you how much they've actually decreased over the years, because they have been decreasing at like a catastrophic rate, honey-making companies who have thousands and thousands of hives spread over fields and things like that, each year they are now reporting a loss between 30 to 90% of their bee population. So some places are experiencing 90% losses. I'll get into the why in a second. Like, there are a couple of reasons that we're trying to fight, but it's not looking good. But yeah, 90%. And then, so just looking at the US alone, the number of hives in 1988 was 5 million across the US. And that in 2015 has now dropped to 2.5 million. So there's half the amount of hives in just the US alone. And then obviously, it's a global thing. Like, they're being ruined in the UK, Asia, everywhere. And this is recently, only very recently, the last 10 years, it's now been sort of categorized and named, and it's a phenomenon called colony collapse disorder. There are a group of factors which they are certain are the causes, but they are still arguing about which one's actually doing the most damage and things like that, and which one to tackle. So I'm just going to do a couple because I realize time is going on, but I did actually think bees quite fascinating. The biggest one is neonicotinoids. I got it out. I did it. Yeah. And it's a type of pesticide, and it's a pesticide where the chemical formula is very close to nicotine, hence the name neonicotinoids. These are the most widely used insecticides in the world, and they're developed in the 1990s, and they kill insects by attacking the nervous system. And you think, like, surely they realize this. And yeah, no, when insecticides are being produced and then going through approval, they are tested on different animals and things like that to see the effects that might go on. And it was believed that they wouldn't be very toxic to bees. It's just like the insects that actually kill things, like, I actually don't know what that would be. What insects are bad for
caterpillars,
crops?
Caterpillars and things, I think.
Yeah, yes, yeah. So, yeah. God, you're so smart sometimes. So
I don't know if that's true. Just, or not.
It'd be funny if it's not. They did actually think, or whether they lied, because I'm going to get into a bit of a scandal in a second with it all. But they did believe that neonicotinoids were very little toxicity to bees, and specifically the honeybee, the most important one. But what has been found, though, in the last 5 to 10 years from, like, independent research, is that bees that come into contact with this type of pesticide seem to get a sort of bee-like version of Alzheimer's, which is quite a sad thing that we're doing to them. And so there's common symptoms where, like, they'll leave the hive or the home if they're, like, one of the solitary kind of species. But then they forget the way back and they just die out in the middle of nowhere. Or they actually can forget how to fly, and they just get stuck on the floor and then die, like really bad Alzheimer's.
See them on the floor?
No, that's, well, I don't know actually. But when you see them on the floor, it's mainly probably because they're resting. And what you should do, if you ever see a bee on the floor and it's not moving much or it's slowly walking, pick it up and put it into a nearby flower so it can drink some nectar. Or if there's no flowers nearby which you think are, like, bee friendly or anything like that, you can mix 50-50 water and sugar and leave it a little teaspoon for them, and then let them drink it and then be on their way, and they'll get their energy back. So yeah, I don't know if it's an Alzheimer bee on the floor or it's just a tired bee, but treat them with respect, guys. Treat them with respect. We're all about positive messages here, and we care about the natural world. So
unless it's a European German black bee, and then it's
yeah, or the killer one. Yeah, just get run away. from the bit of research that I did do, there is a bit of a scandal in the background of the bee world. And obviously actually makes complete sense because the insecticide and the specifically the neonicotinoids, because they're the most widely used insecticide across the world. Just want to interject, I can't believe I'm hitting these words, to be honest, right now. Yeah, the scandal, obviously a $1 billion industry that are producing this. And so from their point of view, from a money-making point of view, they want to slow down the transition if we have to drop them as much as possible. And what's been really funny is if you look at studies that have been sponsored by the chemical industry, they seem to produce results that say there's not much harm to bees and it's all okay. But then when you look at independent researchers and university researchers who look at this stuff, it seems to be that these neonicotinoids are like the worst toxic that you can get for bees. So, you know, a little bit of play going on there. So for ages, obviously, overlooking bodies and governing bodies were seeing the research from the chemical companies themselves and like, oh, it's harmless, it's fine. But now all these independent research is coming out showing actually they lied or they cherry-picked data. And it's actually very problematic. One great thing is that in 2018, the EU did rule to stop the use of these pesticides in the whole entire EU. So that's very good. But a lot of people are worried that because of Brexit, we no longer have to follow that rule. And because it is a cheaper alternative with the insecticides way, that we'll just go back to it. So we'll see what goes on with that. I was actually going to talk to you in depth about the other problems and the other contributing factors to their decline. Parasites is a big thing. They're seeing massive increases due to global warming, just the general heat that they have. They can survive better and do really horrible things to them. And then also global warming. It's the biggest killer, I think, from what I was reading. It's just because with the temperatures rising, flowers bloom earlier, but now there was a very, very delicate balance between like the timings of bees and the timings of queen's pheromones to tell the bees to go out and do the pollination and collect nectar, and those were very, very in line with when plants would be blooming. But now the plants are blooming that much earlier because of the temperature rise that the bees are late to the show, and basically there's not enough nectar, there's not enough pollen, they're not pollinating as much, so there's less flowers next year, and they're also not collecting as much nectar, so there's not as much food for the hives to actually eat and produce and things. So it's just like things are getting wiped out, basically. I think I'll end it there, man. That was I have spoken for a long time. I mean, I did receive feedback saying, you know, they enjoy the topics and we should just run with it. So I'm just taking that full ahead, really. Positive messages. The 2018 legislation about the insecticides, I think, is very, very good. And I hope the UK keeps to it, even though now after Brexit, we don't have to. And it will be, I presume they will have to vote on it if to follow it again or not. But yeah, apart from... there are loads of charities trying to do work, and obviously anyone can have bees, and you should try and plant flowers for the bees to have and promote their lifestyle kind of things in your local area. You know, even little, they love herbs, I read. Herbs are the biggest ones for them. I don't know why, but flowering herbs are like their favorite. So, you know, even if you've just got a pot on the windowsill with a flowery herb in it, that's great. That's what I'm going to leave you guys with. Put a flowery herb pot on your windowsill, guys. Do the world look some good. Otherwise, you have no coffee in a couple of years' time. There you go. I'm out. Mic drop. Over to you, well, mate. Done.
So my section today, I'm going to talk to you about plastics and kind of the truth behind recycling. You know, why we chose plastics, the double-edged sword of plastics.
Ooh.
Is the alternatives actually better than plastics? So hitting you with a lot of things at the beginning, a lot to think about.
Big episode, so, this. I love it. Yeah.
Should we just jump into it? So everyone uses plastic, right? So if you look around your room, them headphones on your head, it's got plastic in it. That microphone stand, got plastic in it. Like everything.
Actually metal. Just to be correct, it's actually metal. But I see the point you're trying to make, okay?
So it's everywhere. But where did it originate from? That's what I'm going to... I always start with a bit of a history lesson.
History's good. One of my favourite subjects.
Do you know how?
No, no clue.
It might surprise you, because you played this game a lot at university. It came from billiard balls or snooker balls or pool balls.
Oh, I do like. Oh, you have piqued my interest now, sir.
Yes, there you go. Sitting up now. So back in the 19th century, billiards or pool, it was kicking off. Like, a lot of people liked to play it in like saloons and things in America. It was like played a lot. And what the balls were made from was actually ivory. And if you don't know, ivory is sourced from elephant trunks.
Very bad. So
what happened was humans doing what they do best, fucking shit up. Basically, we hunted the elephants to a point where demand really outdone the supply, because the only supply we had was these elephants and we killed them all. So all the billiards supplier, they were offering cash rewards. So there was a $10,000 reward. And back in the 19th century, so the 1800s, you know, this would have been like a few hundred thousand dollars for someone to actually invent something that behaved like one but could be produced without using ivory.
After a few episodes we've been doing this now, yeah, humans seem to be a big problem that we keep coming into with the various topics. Yeah. Like, we're really, really not doing very good. Every topic that we come to the table with, humans are fucking it up somehow. Oh, it's like a bad thing with humans.
Yeah. Anyway, so in 1863, an American called John Wesley Hyatt, or however you say it, I don't know, he took up the challenge. And basically, in 5 years it took him, he made this new material. It was called celluloid, and it was made from cellulose. So this was found in like wood and straw and things. And he made this ball from that cellulose. It turns out it wasn't actually very good for billiard balls, because it wasn't heavy enough, didn't quite bounce right. But on top of that, it was highly explosive. So picture yourself in a saloon in like old like America time.
Okay, I'm there. Two
of these balls hit into each other, explode, and everyone thinks it's someone's pulled out their gun and shot. So basically what was happening, all these men would bring out their pistols and like be pointing at everyone like, what's going on?
It'd be like a bar fight.
Yeah, and it would just be because the balls were hitting each other and little explosions were happening because they would
ignite. Wow.
Yeah, so that's a funky little story. Anyway, so
that's why we like history on this channel.
So basically what he produced was known as the first ever plastic. The word plastic basically can describe any material made of polymers, which are basically these large molecules consisting of the same repeating unit, in a nutshell. Okay, polymer is poly, is many, and mers is unit, so many units. Fun little fact for you. Anyway,
you get a little science lesson now.
Yeah, plastic became such a thing because you could have so many different combinations of things to behave differently. Polystyrene, see, it is strong, good for insulation, where vinyl, you know, like a vinyl for music, that's hard.
Oh yeah, right, gotcha.
Flexible, acrylic, transparent, also really strong.
See, you are listing off different plastics.
Yeah.
Just like I was listing off the different bees.
But basically the reason why it's so versatile and it's really easy to make once you get the kind of manufacturing process done. So when injection molding came about, it was like, well, why not just use this over metal or something like that? But problem was, is that we never thought about what we were going to do with the plastic after. It's produced from oil. Most of the time is designed for that single use. Now, each year, one of the studies say there was 400 million tons of plastic produced, and 40% of that is just single-use plastic. So only be used once before it's then binned. And some of these plastics take hundreds of years to decompose, thousands, some of them. So, like, think everything you've used. When you go buy some chicken from the shop, it's in that plastic packaging. You've done that how many times in your life? And you put it in the bin. Like, think of how much plastic you get through just that one time.
It is crazy. It really is crazy.
Another problem is that not all plastics can be recycled. And this might be because the way they're made up or it's too expensive to do so. Some of the coffee cups, I don't know if you saw this, but they actually have a waterproof plastic lining in. Like, obviously, when you hold your coffee, you don't think, oh, this is cardboard, it should just make it all soggy. It's got this plastic lining, and it makes it really difficult to recycle. So then they end up getting thrown away. Every day, apparently, 7 million cardboard coffee cups are thrown away, but only 1 in 400 are recycled.
What? Oh, my Lord. Jesus Christ.
All these coffee cups. And then, obviously, recently it's been brought to attention that there's plastics getting found in the ocean. So It's quite a lot on the news. I reckon 8 million tons of plastic go into the ocean every year. There was this fact that blew my mind, and it's basically experts think that by 2050, there'll be more plastic in the ocean by weight than there are fish. Apparently each year as well, they estimate 100,000 animals in the sea are killed by plastic.
Jesus Christ.
So all over the world, we've got this basically, we've got this war on plastic now. Governments, campaigners, they're all in this effort to save the ocean, stop marine wildlife being harmed. You know, you see all these horrible pictures and videos and things. And to do that, we're being asked to use less and recycle more, which is obviously a good thing. Like, you'd want that. But when I say use less, to use less, we need to use alternatives, right? Like, most of the time, instead of carrying a plastic bag, let's use this other bag and use it loads and loads of times, because you still need that use, right? So when you actually look at the alternatives, this is when stuff gets really crazy, right? I'm going to ask you, what do you think is the worst, right? A normal plastic bag, a biodegradable bag, a paper bag, one of the reusable bag for life things, or cotton tote bags? What do you think is the best?
Which do I think is the best?
Yeah.
I think the cotton has to be the best.
Okay.
The single-use plastic bag has to be the worst, but surely, I'd hope.
Okay.
And then, to be fair, I would say the paper bag, second worst, and then the biodegradable one. And then the bag to life is like the second best, because you keep it and you reuse it constantly. Like, those are the ones I used. Just keep on taking the same bags back to the shops.
I think I'm going to surprise you quite a lot there.
Oh, no.
That's, okay, cool. That's your thoughts, right? So
I thought I was helping the environment, man.
So there's this thing called a lifetime assessment of a product. So you look from how you produce it to how it's maintained, then how it's broken down or whatever. And if you look at normal bags, they use oil and they obviously have this bad impact on the environment. But when you look at other bags, so the biodegradable, you've got to think of carbon dioxide as well in this. So we're talking about global warming and the plastic problem at the same time, because they're quite interlinked. So the biodegradable bags, they are made from plant starches, and overall they produce similar amount of carbon as a plastic bag. But you've got to think of the other additional effects. So the agriculture that's involved in making them starches, you know, they require a lot of water, a lot of fertilizer, pesticides, you know what you were saying about the bees. Use that. That's looking just at a production standpoint. They are worse than the plastic bags because they have all these other additional effects to it. Okay.
So right, gotcha.
If we look at the paper bag, we've got to then cut down the wood.
Yeah.
Find the trees, cut them down. And it basically, they estimate it was a similar climate impact as a normal bag.
So right, gotcha. Yeah. That's why I put that one low. I'm happy I got that one right.
Looking at the reusable bags, these are also made from plastic. So oil, obviously not good.
Mm-hmm.
And they're thicker, so they need more of it.
Mm-hmm.
So it has a bigger impact. Obviously, you're going to reuse it, but from a production standpoint, yeah, that's worse. They're also heavier, so you have to use more fuel to transport them. We're also all human. The amount of times we forget our bags for life and then end up buying another bag for life, and then end up getting more than one bag for life.
Yeah. So they're not a puppy. It's a puppy, okay? You got to keep that shit for life, not just for Christmas.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's true.
And then the cotton tote bags, they seem like a green option, but growing cotton is actually extremely energy intensive.
Is it? Oh,
and it requires huge amounts of land, water, fertilizer, pesticides.
Oh, God.
And it's extremely carbon intensive. So from a production standpoint, plastic is actually the best out of all of them. Okay. Sometimes paper edges that out, depending on what study you look at and what tree you cut from and all that stuff. But the worst material by far is the cotton bags. So when actually just looking at the carbon dioxide footprint of it, you need to reuse a paper bag and a biodegradable bag more than once to make it better than a plastic bag. So the paper bag, unlikely to use it more than once. Like, often you just use it, put it in the recycling, that's it, done, yeah?
Yeah. But just once, did you say? So, like, you just have to use it twice and it's still better than the plastic bag?
From a carbon dioxide standpoint, yeah.
Okay, right.
So that's fine, that's fine. Reusable, you have to use about 6 times. That's fine.
Mm.
Cotton tote bag, you have to use at least 149 times.
Oh, wow. Okay. I was wrong on that one.
Yeah, but that's just carbon dioxide. When you actually look at the total environmental impact, they go through these 15 categories, such as like toxicity, ozone effects, water demand, resource use, all these other things. The numbers are like crazy, right? So,
right, okay.
In order to be greener in a total environmental impact way, you have to reuse the paper bag 43 times.
Mm-hmm. You know, probably not going to be a bag after all that.
No, exactly. The biodegradable bag, 42 times.
Okay.
The reusable plastic bag, 54 times. And the cotton tote bag, the one that you say is the best one, to use 7,100 times.
Oh, wow. Okay, so essentially, if you use the same bag for life for a whole year, for a year's worth of weekly shops, you're near enough going to be okay.
Yeah.
That's the limit. That's the threshold.
Same one. Yeah.
The same bag for life every single Saturday on your weekly shop for a whole year, and then you can get a new one, and then that's kind of like, okay. Yeah, I don't think humans are going to use the same bag for a whole year.
No. It's just people forget. Can't see that, like,
I went
to the shop today and I forgot a bag. I ended up having to carry everything because I refused to buy.
Yeah, to be fair, I was going to ask that. Did you look at all as like how things are changing? Because yeah, if I'm getting a few little things, I'll literally just carry them for like 10 minutes home if I can, rather than getting that one little bag. Or I do try, or I put them in my rucksack or like whatever bag I have on me at the time, kind of thing, with like books or whatever, rather than buying one of the plastic bags. So I do think like people do want to change.
Yeah, people do, but it still doesn't stop you for that one time where you've got too much stuff that you need to carry. Anyway, I don't want to get stuck up on that. Just to show that, you know, these ideas of, oh, it's better, it's greener option, isn't always the case. And
are you going to be telling us what the best one is then?
Well, I think what we said is you can reuse it. It's basically reduce the plastic use as much as you can. There's a similar thing with straws. I'm not going to go into the details of it. But the plastic straw, it's got loads of bad press and everything. But the actual environmental, like people then got metal straws. So I own a metal straw. Mm. Some people got glass straws. But the environmental impact of making a metal straw, you know, you've got to melt the metal, you've got to form it, you've got to then transport it, ends up being 37 times more impact than the plastic straw would have. And the only problem with the plastic straw is if it ends up in the ocean, really. If you could landfill it, and you have the space and it can decompose over hundreds of years, then it's fine.
But then you see the horrible photos of like straws up turtle noses and things like
that. Well, exactly. That's the problem.
You know why we dump it into the ocean? Like who's had a meeting and said, there's a big problem with plastic. Where are we going to put it? Who's the guy who went, let's just chuck it in the ocean, mate. Like there's lots of room there. It'll sink. And it doesn't sink. It just floats. But you know, who the hell came up with that idea?
It's hard because I'll tell you kind of where the plastic gets in the ocean and then you can start to point fingers and then it will actually surprise you. So this plastic, it's hard to dispose of, right? Ends up getting into the sea somehow. When I talk about the sea, where it gets in, the worst place that happens is in East Asia, China, Indonesia, Philippines, Vietnam and Sri Lanka. And they're responsible for more than half of the world's plastic in the ocean. So in comparison, the UK ranks really, really low. If you put all the countries in the EU plus the UK with the coastline, we'd be a combined 18th place in the world for putting plastic in the ocean. The problem is, I think the UK is very insignificant in this, really, when looking at them numbers. But say I have a plastic cup and I put it in the recycling, I'm assuming that cup is going to be recycled all the time, right? Well, apparently in the UK, 42% of plastic waste gets recycled, 42% gets incinerated, and 13% gets buried in landfill, okay? But the 42% that we send for recycling, we don't have the facilities in our country to actually recycle that amount. And it's much, much more expensive to do it here because we have to pay higher wages. So what do? We end up shipping it to them countries that have the worst plastic waste. So we ended up in 2018, we shipped 611,000 tons of plastic.
So we can't say we're good on in this at all, can we?
No, so like all the
like plastic, it's our fault. Yeah.
The plastic that's getting in the ocean is our plastic, but we're just poo-pooing it somewhere else. But China have actually recently banned that, but Malaysia's still taking it. Some of the countries are starting to think, okay, this isn't a good idea, taking in all this rubbish, because we're basically paying companies to take it for us.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is, once it leaves our shores, we don't care that much to track where that goes. It might end up in a recycling plant where it's they're saying that they're going to do it and it's fine, but some of it ends up in the ocean.
It's sad because these places that are chucking it in the ocean then are the places with like the nicest oceans, like the ones with like the coral reefs and things. Like, I'd rather do it in England with like just, you know, some crappy seaweed and some seals than like where the turtles and all the corals live.
But yeah, so these countries that we ship it to, they're the worst equipped to actually deal with that rubbish. Like, if we dealt with it, we have the technology to sort it all out. We could recycle it, get better use out of it, but we don't do that. We ship it to people that they end up having beaches full of it, don't know what to do with it, and then it ends up just getting washed away.
So it's a positive feedback loop of crap, basically.
Yeah, and it's not going to change until the government incentivizes people like the UK to do it. And is there going to be money in that right now? Probably not, with everything that's happening. Mm. Anyway, so what happens to the rest of the plastic? So I said 42% gets incinerated. And the UK government actually say that this is quite good because you can burn it and it acts as fuel. You can generate electricity. Obviously, it creates carbon emissions. So then you're taking the plastic waste in the ocean and then giving up the whole global warming aspect because you're releasing all these emissions and things like that. The other options, the landfill. People think, oh, no, you shouldn't do that. Like, it's a horrible... Like, whenever you picture a landfill, you're like, oh, no, this is bad.
Yeah, it ruins the aesthetic of a country, doesn't it?
Yeah, but you can... If you landfill sensibly, where you line it all so none of the harmful toxins get out, and you do it...
Okay. I actually didn't know there was, like, a good way to landfill. I honestly just thought they chucked it somewhere altogether, and then the problem was it seeped into the soil.
So they actually line...
The
landfill sites with plastic.
It's quite ironic.
Yeah, so what else can we do in this? You know, the government has taken the stand of we want to try and reduce the amount of plastic we use. Seems like a really good idea, but then government policies don't really base it on good scientific advice or evidence or anything. So the plastic straws, we know that they can be damaging to the marine wildlife. And I think we've actually banned them now in the UK. Like, you can't buy a plastic straw from like a bar or something.
But, yeah, because McDonald's had that big thing, didn't they?
Yeah, and they've got plastic paper straws now.
Yeah.
But where does that paper straw come from? It comes from a tree, you know. Water thing. Anyway, so by the estimates, there was 47 million straws every year being produced. The government reckoned that was 1% was getting in the ocean.
1%? Oh, my God.
But that 1% was provided with no calculations, no proof, no scientific evidence. Oh. It was just based on assumption. They were basically saying, we assume that 1% will get into the ocean. But, you know, what I said before about if we could recycle in the country, how is it going to get into the ocean, apart from the few people that are dicks and throw straws in the ocean? If we did it here, it wouldn't be a problem.
No, you'd be able to actually have strong figures.
Yeah, and you wouldn't, like, the only reason it's getting in the ocean is because we're offloading it all to these countries that can't handle the rubbish, and then it ends up getting in the ocean. So it kind of, obviously it's a good thing that we ban straws because they will somehow get to the ocean, and it's bad. But the whole policy of us shipping our rubbish, you know, we talk about straws, but what about plastic bags? They're not banned yet. All the other plastic stuff, which will still end up in the ocean, which will probably do a lot more damage than a single straw would.
Is a paper bag better to go in the ocean? Because I feel like that might just like disintegrate away better than like obviously a plastic or like a paper straw. The fact that we move to those, they would like more disintegrate in the ocean.
You assume that they would get soggy and then end up just breaking up.
Yeah.
There's a thing with like paper straws, right? I don't know about you, but if you have a drink and you haven't finished it, you end up having to get another paper straw.
Oh, they're crap, yeah.
Yeah, so like they get soggy, you can't end up drinking it.
Yeah.
You have to get another one. Now, I've already said like the carbon footprint of making a straw is already worse than the plastic. Now you're using two of them for that one. So it's that balance of you know, we can ban plastic, but is the climate change side of that going to be worse or better? Because you're
right, yeah,
you know, it's still bad. We're using oil and fossil fuels to make these things.
So, Toby, what is the solution? I hope you've come up with a new chemical to solve all of our problems. That's so, kind of what I'm expecting.
If you go on the Not So Alpha Males Instagram, you can find our new plastic product, which doesn't use any plastic. But no, my conclusion is that the war on plastic isn't simple. It's very complicated. Mm. And using alternatives is a good thing, but you need to make sure that the alternative isn't actually worse than the plastic itself, because it's just might be a PR kind of stunt. Oh, get this cotton bag. It might look like it's environmentally friendly, but where did that cotton come from? How was it made and stuff like that? And by solving the problem with the plastic in the sea, which is obviously a massive problem, might then offset that with all the problems with climate change, because you're putting out all this more carbon and everything. So yeah, that's, I'm going to finish on that. Not a high, not a low, just what the fuck do we do? Thank you and good night.
Well, we might not have to worry about it for much longer, because if there's no bees left, we're going to die. And, you know, as Albert Einstein said, 4 years, it doesn't matter, mate.
He didn't say.
Glad you're listening to me. There you go. Proof. No, it's an interesting one, the plastics. So essentially, we should just all not use as much and try to use what we do use multiple times.
Lots to think about, no answers. Hopefully people solve it soon.
That's basically what we bring to the audience of this podcast. No answers, just a lot of things to think about, though. We'll highlight the problems and expect other people to find the solutions. That's how we roll. Exactly. I like it.
What was your Irish cocktail cactus like?
It's not really a cocktail. If any, it's just a strong Baileys, to be honest. But it was quite nice, but it is just drinking a strong Baileys. So I'd recommend it, but it's not really like a out there summer tropical cocktail. Next week's will be better. How about yours?
My face is red, so I don't know if that's the...
Oh, yeah, Christ. Sorry, I've not been watching you trying to work out if I should, like, yell for your mum or something.
Hope she's got hay fever for my mum. Just that, mate. And on that sorry note, thanks everyone for listening. Follow us on Instagram and everything, and we'll see you soon. See you later.
See you soon, guys.